Because of the bodily conception of life, the conditioned soul thinks that when the body is annihilated, the living being is annihilated. Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the Supreme Controller, the Supersoul of all living entities. Because he has no material body, he has no false conception of I and mine. It is therefore incorrect to think that he feels pleasure or pain when blasphemed or offered prayers. This is impossible for him. Thus he has no enemy and no friend. When he chastises the demons, it is for their good, and when he accepts the prayers of the devotees, it is for their good. He is affected neither by prayers nor by blasphemy. Purport. Because of being covered by material bodies, the conditioned souls, including even greatly learned scholars and falsely educated professors, all think that as soon as the body is finished, everything is finished. This is due to their bodily conception of life. Krishna has no such bodily conception, nor is his body different from himself, from his self. Therefore, since Krishna has no material conception of life, how can he be affected by material prayers and accusations? Krishna's body is described herewith as Kaivalya, non-different from himself. Since everyone has a material bodily conception of life, if Krishna had such a conception, what would be the difference between Krishna and the conditioned soul? Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita are accepted as final because he does not possess a material body. As soon as one has a material body, he has four deficiencies. But since Krishna doesn't possess a material body, he has no deficiencies. He is always spiritually conscious and blissful. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satsidananda Vigraha. His form is eternal blissful knowledge. Satsidananda Vigraha. Ananda Chinmaya Ras and Kaivalya are the same. Krishna can expand himself as Paramatma in the core of everyone's heart. In Bhagavad Gita 13.3, this is conferred. Kshetragyam chapimam vidisarva kshetu sabharata. The Lord is the Paramatma, the Atma, or the Super-Self of all living souls. Therefore, it is most naturally concluded. Therefore, it must naturally be concluded that he has no defective bodily conceptions. Although situated in everyone's body, he has no bodily conception of life. He's always free from such conceptions, and thus he cannot be affected by anything in relation to the material body of the jiva. Purport continues, but I'll start commenting and then read the second half of the purport later. Om Agyana Timarandasya Ginandana Sarakya Shakshura Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Dvaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, very interesting that Krishna has no false conception of I and mine. This is exactly what material life is all about. And it is the same as stated by Bhishmadev, who is saying that Krishna is not depending on any external things to add to his ego or to boost up his ego, in our words. So that's interesting because we indeed are always involved in boosting up our ego. We look for external things to give us an image, also in a positive sense. We wear saffron clothes because it reminds us of our commitment to the lotus feet of Krishna. Why saffron? Because the dust at the lotus feet of Krishna is saffron. Can't beat that argument, can you? That makes it still a good color. But we are wearing that so that it will influence our consciousness. Thus we are always, in a positive sense and in a negative sense, using external things to add to our consciousness. In the negative sense, for our own glorification and our false prestige. Right? We know that in some cultures of the world, rich people used to take out a tooth and put a diamond in there. Smile. Bam. So, in other countries, we do it more subtle. Just Swiss. Yeah, like that. You know, it's just a brand name, a little brand name here, a little brand name there, and immediately you're up one level in social circus. So, in many ways, we are boosting up our ego, but Krishna is not at all affected like that. In Srimad Bhagavatam, there is the description of Indra, who was seated on his throne in his court, and there were many personalities who were glorifying him, who were describing the glories of Indra. Some were speaking and saying, Indra did the most wonderful things, and just remember the pastimes of Indra. And Indra was also remembering his own pastimes. And then others were singing songs, Jai Indra, yes, Jai, Jai, Jai. And then in the middle of all that, Brihaspati, his spiritual master, appeared in the court. And Indra was so absorbed in the glorification that he totally forgot to welcome his spiritual master. He didn't come down from the Vyasa Sun, didn't offer his obeisances. And Brihaspati just left, so inauspicious. So here we see that the conditioned soul becomes overwhelmed. And the more we say, Jai, Jai, and the more we start to feel, yes, yes, and we indulge in it, and we get carried away by this aggrandizement. But Krishna is not affected by it. Krishna, it says, is also not affected by blasphemy. We may recall the story of Bhrigu, who was asked by the sages to ascertain who was the Supreme Lord, Brahma, Shiva, or Lord Vishnu. Came to Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma wanted to embrace him. And Lord Shiva said, no, 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 don't touch me. And Lord Brahma was offended. So he neglected Lord Brahma. In the case of Lord Shiva, he was even stronger, and he was just physically abrasive. But in the case of Lord Vishnu, he kicked him on the chest with full force. So, you know, that was outright obnoxious. And Lord Vishnu said, oh, my dear Bhrigu, I mean, I hope you are all right, you know, and that you didn't hurt your foot. My chest is very hard. Are you okay? So he was totally unaffected. And then Bhrigu could understand, yes, he's the Supreme Lord. Because he's not affected by any blasphemy or by any such things. The others were, but Vishnu was not. So the same point is coming out there in that narration of the 10th canto. How the Lord is not affected. In the story of Jagai and Madai, we remember that they were both very much degraded and engaged in violence and in all kinds of outrageous activities. And they even attacked Lord Nityananda, as we know. But then Madai was the one who hit Lord Nityananda with the pot. And Jagai, when Nityananda stood there bleeding, then Madai wanted to beat him again. And Jagai said, no, stop. Right? He's innocent. Don't do this. Right? And for that, right, Jagai, later on, Lord Chaitanya appeared, Sudarshan Chakra ready, killed them, and then said, no, no, but Jagai, Nityananda said, no, Jagai has tried to save me. Oh, Lord Chaitanya embraced Jagai, and Madai had to still suffer. Jagai, love of God, ecstasy, and Madai looking at like, but, wait a minute. What about me? We did the same. Well, subsequently, Madai was embraced by Nityananda, and then he also got love of God. But there was a complication that Madai, although he had been forgiven by Lord Nityananda, he could not forgive himself. That was the problem. And because he could not forgive himself, he had no peace. He had no peace of mind. So he was, and then Nityananda one day spoke to him, and Nityananda said, My dear Madhai, all these offenses you have committed towards me, he said, I didn't take that very serious. He said, like when a child hits his father, the father is not really becoming very disturbed by it. So in this way, we see how the Supreme Lord is viewing the situation. A father is not overwhelmed that when a child calls out the name of his father, then the father is not, I'm being glorified. That's not the mood of the father. The mood of the father is, this child loves me. That touches his heart. So it's not that he's enjoying the glorification. My name, my glories. So in the same way, the Supreme Lord, when the devotee calls out to him, he takes it as a symptom of love. Even if there is not much love in the heart of that devotee, it's the beginning of love. Because there is no remuneration. So therefore, his own glories, when Krishna hears his own holy name, has nothing to do with it. It simply has to do with the intimate relationship that Krishna has with all living beings, an intimate relationship of love. And that is why Krishna is unaffected by these, by this kind of glorification of himself, which is interesting. But you see, it's like if the situation was, I am the Supreme Lord, the master of all that I survey, naturally they must worship me, these lowly, fallen, dependent jivas. If not, I will send them to hell. Yes, they deserve it for neglecting me. For such neglect, I will have them burn for a long time. Yes, because I am the Lord and Master of all that I survey, and thus I am to be worshipped. That's not at all the situation. Krishna is not in this bhav. I'm the Master and Lord of all that I survey. I am the Lord, the Lord of all these living creatures. Yes, Lord am I, and they are serf, and they are slave, and they will crawl with nose in the dirt and bow down. Manmana Bhava Madbhakto, I'm saying to you, offer your obeisances now, right, again and again. Every time when you come into my temple room, thou shalt bow, right? Oh, yes. And all day long, thou shalt slave, and on Janmashtami, I will have a feast, and thou shalt fast. And I am the Lord and Master, and I enjoy it like anything. On your knees. Is there any callus there? Not yet. Again, more often. I am not satisfied with your lack of surrender. So first, make a sacrifice for me. Yes. Are you ready? Sacrifice everything. Everything you have. Then we make him in sort of like a ruler of this world who's bored stiff and is looking for some excitement and so on. But as soon as we see the loving relationship that Krishna has with every living being, then it's a whole different thing. So Krishna is intimately connected with everyone. There's not one soul who is not part of himself. Just like, that's the thing about a child, of course it's on the bodily bodily platform, but it's part of me. Part of me lives in this child, and this bondage is just there, part of me, this child, same nose as his father. Yes, like that, the bond is deep. So the bond between Krishna and the living being is just eternally there, and it's a loving relationship. We have forgotten, but he has not. So therefore, even if we are sort of reluctantly chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, like a squeaky door, Krishna, Krishna, Hare, oh, a little break, some herbal tea. Take a break in the middle of the mantra, and then after the tea, I'll do part two. Okay. In this way, we are trying to chant, but Krishna's even very pleased with that, because he's seeing, no, they're taking a step towards me. It is said that when we take one step towards Krishna, he takes 10 steps towards us. Also, tesam evanukam pratam aham agyana jamtamaha nasiyami admabhavastu jnana dipena basvataha. So the third line, nasiyami atmabhavastu, is that sto means I'm situated, I'm there, I'm in that place, atmabhava, in the consciousness of the soul. I am there in the consciousness of the soul, waiting, nasiyami. I am waiting. I am waiting for this soul to come a little closer to me. Nasiyami. One little bit closer to me. And immediately, yes, yes, Krishna becomes very enthusiastic. Oh, you are coming to me. Yes, finally. I've been waiting so long. I also like it in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. The Brihad Bhagavatamrita, for many reasons, is an amazing book. One thing in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which is very nice, is that Gopa Kumar, at the end of his life, goes back to Godhead. Now, that is very nice, and we have also in other scriptures many narrations of personalities who went back to Godhead. But the one thing that's different about Gopa Kumar is that he also arrives. Usually we just heard, and then he went back to Godhead. The end. The lion appears on the screen and the movie is over. But in the case of Gopa Kumar, no. The movie goes on and then he arrives in the spiritual world. And there is Krishna, and when Krishna, and his name is Sarup. And when Krishna sees Sarup, he calls out, Sarup! And then he faints. The gopis think he must be an agent of Kamsa. And they are getting ready to take some action, but Balaram interferes. No, no, he's all right. He's all right. Sarup, chant in the ear of Krishna. So Sarup chants in the ear of Krishna, Balaram, and upon the order of Balaram, and Krishna comes to his senses. Then Yasoda, Mother Yasoda, is calling out and says, quick, quick, Nanda Maharaj is waiting. All the prasadam is ready. Please come now. Don't keep your father waiting. So then, okay, they go. They come home and they bring Sarup. And all along, Krishna is just saying, Sarup, Sarup, where have you been all this time? It's been such a long time. It's not like a cartoon experience, you know, you were in the spiritual world, went down to the material world, and there was a vacuum in the spiritual world, and then suddenly, whoop, you're back, you know, and running again with the cowherd boys in the field, you know, and something like that. No, it's not at all like that. Right? We can see that there is a personal, Krishna is personally very pleased when a spirit soul returns to the spiritual world. That is Sanatana Goswami's point. So that relationship, that eternal relationship, is very deep from Krishna's side. It's from Krishna's side, it was never covered for a moment. It's us who sort of blocked it out. We put on the dark glasses. Krishna, where is he? Where is God? The problem is that he's invisible. Take off the dark glasses. It might help. But as long as we have the dark glasses of the bodily concept of life and of false ego, Krishna will remain hidden from us. Naham prakasa sarvasa yoga maya samavritaha. Then Krishna will remain hidden. Then we can't see him. Okay, now I'll finish the purport, otherwise I'll never finish it. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 16:19, Tan aham dvisata kruran sansari sunaradaman ksipa mya jasram asuban asu risveva jonisu. Those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest among men, are cast by me into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life. So this sounds again like one of those heavy verses. Ha ha, so you are envious, huh? Okay, well, I know that game too. Ha ha. Down, down in the demoniac species of life. And there you can stay life after life, and your mother will be a demon. See? Nietzsche in The Antichrist, which is actually an interesting book to read if you have nothing else to do. Nietzsche in The Antichrist indeed describes a very proud God who says, yes, they are worshipping me in heaven. In heaven, they're worshipping me. And why wouldn't they worship me? I have given them everything. I've given them everything to enjoy. But what, imagine if I would put them in a position where they are deprived, and then God created man, and he gave man a position of life where there was very little enjoyment. And then he invented religion, and there he made man even give up the few things that he could enjoy. That's Nietzsche in The Antichrist. It's interesting. So again, this image of a very cruel, bored ruler who's looking for different types of games to entertain himself. But the truth of the matter is that's all the projection of the material world, because we're living in a boring world. It's totally boring, right? There's absolutely nothing happening here, and you just have to all the time add some color to it, you know, add some excitement to it. Otherwise, it's just totally empty. Yes. And so, you know, well, what are we going to do? It's a Saturday night. I'll go downtown. And downtown, flashlight. Yes, downtown. It's happening downtown. And what's happening downtown? Nothing special happening downtown. Same thing every other Saturday. Same old story, you know. And what to do downtown? Well, you know. Guess what? It's Saturday night. Same old story. And I ain't got nobody. Yeah. all that, you know. And yes. All the time. Just like now. Oh, it's Christmas. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. Well, you got it. And it's the biggest party of the year, and it's all about artificial lighting. It's all about adding something to the darkness, because basically it's a festival that roots back in older traditions, and that was the festival of light, which was celebrated in the middle of the winter, because it's so dark and so depressing and just gets too much in December. In November, you start to feel a little miserable, right? Quite miserable. Thoughts of what's the point of life? What's the use of living? Sort of begin to enter the mind in November. By the time December comes, it would be total depression and absolute misery. But then, you know, then, yes, you know, Christmas is coming. Christmas will save you. Christmas will have glitter, lights, and gifts, and everything. We'll add all this artificial happiness to the darkness. So this is the material world. Basically dark. Basically dark. And by our endeavor, we can add all kinds of pleasures. The basic condition is suffering. And by hard work, you may get some enjoyment. But also not much. That's the situation. Too hot, too cold, too dry, too wet, too this, too that. That's the nature. So it's so difficult for us to imagine the spiritual world where everything is blissful. Everything is a blissful experience. Here, everything is a little bit austere. Isn't it a little austere to sit on your little cushion? It is. Isn't it a little austere to lean with your back against the cold wall? Well, it's a little austere to sit on the Vyasa Sun as well. Believe it or not. And it's quite austere to wear flower garlands.
I mean, you know.
First of all, there's always the bit of string. You see? It cuts deep into the neck. I mean, it really cuts, Because the ladies who make the garlands, or whoever makes the garlands, are not pulling the flowers down, And sure enough, after you wear the thing, after about 10 minutes, the flowers sag by their own weight, and there you are, with the string, And, God, it leaves, you know, during Rati Yatras, you forget about it, and you got this huge, big red mark in your neck at night, And you wonder, what's that pain in my neck? It's the garland. Of course, we can put the chatter in between. That helps. But it is a bit stuffy. It's not ideal, The material world is like that. We can always find something uncomfortable. Because uncomfortable is the normal condition and then some pleasure, While you got a pain in your back and something in your neck and an itch on your toe and you're trying to enjoy by putting a gulab jamun in your mouth. It is that picture, that Bengali picture where a man has fallen into a pit and somehow or other he grabbed a root sticking out of the wall and he's hanging on it. And below him there's a huge serpent with its mouth wide open, the serpent of death. And above, if he was ever thinking to get out of the hole over the edge, there is just a tiger looking down at him, licking its lips. So the situation is 100% hopeless. And just then, something, a drop falls on his face. And another drop, and he licks it. It's honey. Delicious. He opens his mouth to catch the next drop. So that is the picture of the material world. So the spiritual world is so different. It is totally blissful. Totally blissful. Every experience is totally blissful. We can't even imagine it, even if we try. We keep on projecting. We keep on projecting material limitations on the spiritual world. Even if we try not to, it's not possible to conceive of a fully blissful experience. So, therefore, Krishna is not bored. Krishna doesn't need to bring in all kinds of excitement. God, we've been playing around with these cows for a long time, let's think of a new game. Although, we do find that sometimes they do have some excitement in the spiritual world, but it's not to counteract the boring situation, it's simply to even make it more exciting. But it's always exciting, never boring. there is a story how in the, again, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, how suddenly Kaliya is back. No, how is it possible? How can it be? How can Kaliya be back? No, he is back. Everybody comes to see. And then Krishna, this time, instead of dancing on the hoots of Kaliya, he bridles him. He bridles him like a horse, and with the reins, he is steering him and invites all the cowherd boys to come and sit on the hoots of Kaliya, and they're racing up and down the Yamuna, just for some variety. So, variety is there, yes. But it's not that they need that, you know. It's been hellish the whole week, you know. I mean, really, nothing going on. But, you know, we're going to have a weekend. Ooh, you know, it's going to be a clanger and a banger of a weekend. Hey, let's go, you know. Go for some winter sports. So always looking for ways to overcome the dryness of material existence. That doesn't exist in Krishna's life. It's a constant experience of nectar. But because Krishna has deep love for the living beings, he desires that they also will share in that nectar. Krishna is Atmaram. He's fully satisfied within himself. He has no need for anything beyond himself. He's fully satisfied. But still, out of love, he desires to see that every living being is also fully realizing his potential of happiness. Finish the purport. Whenever the Lord punishes persons like demons, however, such punishment is meant for the good of the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul, being envious of the Supreme Personality of God, it may accuse him, saying, Krishna is bad, Krishna is a thief, and so. But Krishna, being kind to all living entities, does not consider such accusations. Instead, he takes account of the conditioned soul's chanting of Krishna, Krishna so many times. He sometimes punishes demons for one life by putting them in a lower species. But then, when they have stopped accusing him, they're liberated in the next life because of chanting Krishna's name constantly. Blaspheming the Supreme Lord or his devotee is not at all good for the conditioned soul. But Krishna, being very kind, punish the conditioned soul in one life for such sinful activities and then takes him back home, back to Godhead. The vivid example for this is Ritasura, who was formerly Chitraketu Maharaj, a great devotee. Because he derided Lord Shiva, the foremost of all devotees, he had to accept the body of a demon called Vrita. But then he was taken back to Godhead. Thus, when Krishna punishes a demon or conditioned soul, he stops that soul's habit of blaspheming him. And when the soul becomes completely pure, the Lord takes him back to Godhead. So this is Krishna's intention. Krishna's intention is to take all the living beings back to Godhead. That is his desire. This is his only desire, to take us back to Godhead. And we are, do we really have to? Well, you joined the Hare Krishna movement. Yeah, but can't I go a little slow? I mean, you don't know, but You joined with the intention to surrender. Yeah, but that was not practical. I didn't quite understand then what it really meant to be a devotee. Can't I drag my feet a little longer? Can't I stretch the principles a little bit? Can't I, you know, break them sometimes? Do we really have to have 4? Can't we have 3.5, 3.25? Can't we? Like this. We want to negotiate with Krishna. We would like it cheaper. Yes, Lord Chaitanya, you are the most merciful incarnation. Right? I mean, do you really want us to follow all these spiritual standards? Develop the desire to go back to Godhead. Although Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is praying, Janmani Janmani Swaray Bhavatat Bhaktir Ahaitukir Twayi. Birth after birth, I simply desire to come back into this world and engage in your devotional service. Srila Prabhupada hasn't stressed that. Srila Prabhupada has stressed back to Godhead, not only as the name of the magazine, but practically as his motto. So that motto, back to Godhead, is very much the motto. Why? Because we first have to develop a desire to be in the spiritual world. Like sometimes someone wrote me a letter, say, "Well, I'm not so sure if I want to go back to Godhead because, you know, I don't know anybody there." Amazing what can happen in the mind, no? It's like, don't worry, Krishna, your old friend, is there. Don't worry. And many of your old friends will be there. But it's too alien. We can't relate to it. You know, what will it be like in the spiritual world? It's difficult to understand. And do I really have to herd cows? Someone said, you know, cows, milking cows. Someone said, well, you know, whatever. But I'm not going to milk cows. You know, I'm not going to milk cows. Right? Not that. You know. Well, that is a fact that. We are all city people. We're not accustomed to milking cows. And then we have to live like that, like farmers. Who is a farmer? You gotta raise your hand. I mean, and not that many farmers around. See, well, at least one. We got a farmer. All right, we're going to milk the cows. So imagine all these cowherd boys and cowherd girls, and they're all just, you know, vaishyas, right? So, you know, the spiritual world's all about farming, yeah? Well, are you sure you want to go? Yeah. Madhu Mangal gets away light. He's a brahmana. He just gets the sweets for giving blessings. But everyone else, cowherd boys and this, that, you know, in Vrindavan, vaishyas, there you go, right? Taking care of the cows. So it's difficult to understand from a mundane point of view. Difficult to really be attracted to that. You know, when we are thinking of them playing tamburas in the spiritual world, the tendency is to sort of put it horizontal and make it electric, if you know what I mean. You know. So it goes deep, the material conditioning, and it's. Do we really desire to go back to the spiritual world? Therefore, Srila Prabhupada stressed back to Godhead and first cultivate that desire. First find out about the spiritual world, and then gradually, then we can later, Janmani, Janmani Sure Bhavatat Bhakti Haitaki Tvayi. Alright, later we can try to meditate on this point. Life after life, I'll be in the material world just serving you. I have no other desire. Still, Krishna takes us back. Oh. Hare Krishna. So, like that, we must... we need to have a change of heart. We need to actually... change. We cannot just be the same person and just change our dress and start chanting Hare Krishna but stay the same that we always were under the cover. No, we have to actually come to the point to say, I'm going to internally try and become a different person. I'm going to internally try and say goodbye to certain aspects of my nature, and I'm going to internally try to embrace some favorable activities in devotional service. Right? And this has to be it. And I'm going to try to actually see the good qualities in Krishna. I'm going to try to explore the wonderful qualities of Krishna so that I can actually develop some appreciation. Because how do you think love of God will develop? You know, I'm just simply chanting Hare Krishna. Right? And then love of God will develop, without a doubt. So how will it be? Will we be in material consciousness, totally conditioned, you know, still our feet tapping when certain music plays on the radio, and chanting Hare Krishna? And then one day, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, suddenly, boing, the light goes on. I love Krishna, I love Krishna. Like that. From dark to light by the flick of a switch. Not exactly. There is a transformation. There is a point where we must begin to appreciate Krishna. We actually begin to see Krishna is actually amazing. Krishna is actually nice. Actually, these pastimes of Krishna are something else. They are just out of this world. They are absolutely amazing. We have to first appreciate Krishna before we can begin to love him. Otherwise, we'll just be here, you know. I mean, I'm in the Hare Krishna movement. Krishna, yes, he's God. I don't particularly like him that much, but anyway, you know, I do worship him, right? Because you have to. And if you don't, you get heavy reactions. So we have to develop our appreciation for Krishna. It's an important step on the way, an appreciation for his pastimes, appreciation for the spiritual world. You want to be a cowherd boy and play in the forest and imitate animals? Is that your most heartfelt desire? Or do you want to have a girlfriend? You see the point, you know? It's not so easy. But at one point, we really must have this deep heartfelt desire to be with Krishna. So we must begin to appreciate his activities of the spiritual world. All right, I stop questions, comments.